This is Wells Tech, a weekly show exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. Your hosts are Sally Draper and Martin Spriggs. Wells Tech is produced by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Welcome to Wells Tech, everybody. This is episode 536, recorded on February 13th, 2018. I'm Martin Spriggs, and this is a show about technology and ministry and where those two intersect. Each and every week, we get together and try and figure that stuff out. And helping me do that, as usual, Sally Draper. Hey, Sally, how are you this afternoon?
I am good. I'm back in my normal environment here, but I sure do enjoy sitting next to you when we get to do the podcast like we did last week, side by side. I think it makes the conversation flow a little bit easier than over a Google Hangout.
There are some limitations, the back and forth, and I think just kind of body language is helpful too to see. So there's nothing quite like being live and in living color. But we had a great show, and I'm looking forward to this show as well, because we're continuing our month-long series on training techies, we're calling it. And there are lots of opportunities for people with technical skills to serve in the church, and lots of different avenues to do that. We talked about worship projection last week. If you missed it, go back and episode 535, and we're going to continue that theme with another great interview. Episode 537 here talk, or 536 here talks about church, mostly church, but also school management software. There are lots of options, lots of different ways to do it, but there are some kind of tried and true do's and don'ts. And one thing that we're trying to do this month is put together just a series of tips that if you're getting into the church management software business and you're trying to get people trained up trying to make good sense of what you're doing there and be good stewards of the software, what would be the things that you'd really want to put at the top of your list? And Sally, where would you start if you were training up a techie in church management software?
Well, probably a great place to start, and I'm totally going off the map with this answer, Martin, now that I think about it, is to help everyone understand what church management software is. You know, they may think it's something that runs the lights and the heating system in the building. So I think there's some basic understanding that people need to have about how you manage the data, the electronic components of your congregation or school. So these would be things like contact information for your members, offering information for your members, their attendance, maybe different boards and committees that they serve on, all that kind of data stuff, baptism dates and confirmation dates and wedding dates and funeral dates and on and on. Just any kind of data that you want to keep up with related to the members and prospective members of your congregation, and helping your volunteers understand a little bit about why you want to keep the data up. You know, what value does it give you to do things consistently in the database that you're maintaining, that kind of thing, rather than just throwing them in there and saying, you know, go to the screen and push this button, but giving them more of an understanding of what the software does for you in the day-to-day activities of the congregation and school.
Yep. It is a pretty critical piece of the church office and the school office. You want to get it right, so you want to have a strategy going in to keep that data. And one of the top tips I would think would just to be make sure that if you've got somebody new in the system that you've got, they've got a lifeline, that they've got somebody they can call, you know, a buddy, a contact, somebody more knowledgeable than they if they run into problems, so they don't have to guess. It can be really intimidating to come into a big system, especially for, you know, medium or large sized church, and really not know what button to push or make some guesses and make the wrong choices. And then you've got bad data in your database, and that can lead to all kinds of problems.
Yep. Another good tip is to have good documentation for them to reference. So write down whatever those rules are. I know in some databases, you don't put a lot of periods in addresses and things like that. So if you introduce someone new to the system and they start putting periods in all over the place, your data is not going to be consistent. So you want to write down those rules, illustrate them with examples and things like that so that they have some clear guidelines to go by.
One place where that really can be problematic is in most of the systems that are called true church management software solutions have something called tags or something that you attach that you've created yourself. And if that becomes inconsistent, those become useless. You don't really have the ability to report on them or create mailing labels. So let's say you're creating a tag called electronic newsletters. You've taken the time to gather all the people who are willing to take their newsletter electronically. But if you aren't consistent in how you tag a family or an individual with that, then you've really defeated the purpose of kind of going through that process in the first place. So you want some of those rules of the road, those processes really hard-coded so that everybody is on the same page and you're really not sabotaging yourself by bad data practices.
Very true. You also want to be sure that you understand the levels of permission that you can assign to different users in your system. So if you have recruited someone to be a once a month offering counter or once a quarter offering counter or whatever it may be, you don't want to give them access to the complete host of things that you can do in the database. You want to give them very much almost a tunnel in that gets them to exactly where they need to be to do that one function. And so, sometimes you have to set up those permissions and go try them out and see if they can get to other things that they don't really need access to. You know, be confident and understand well how to set up permissions and make sure that they're working correctly for you. And that limits the exposure that your data has to people that may not understand all the areas that need to be maintained.
Right. And there's a question of privacy. Of course, you want to be able to assure your members that, hey, the right people see the right things. So that's an important part of that. Getting back to the data a little bit, I think one way to kind of practice good software hygiene or data hygiene is regular reviews. Look at your data. Print out or establish some reports that you can look at or the knowledgeable people can look at and say, hey, we're doing this right, or boy, there looks like there's some gaps or some inconsistent practices going on. Maybe that's quarterly, 6 months, a year, whatever it is. It's just that it's, thorough enough that you can understand what's going on with your data. If you don't, you get 4 or 5 years, 6 years down the line and you're really in trouble, then you almost kind of have to start over if that database becomes unusable or certainly you're not getting your money's worth because you haven't paid attention to, what's in. Garbage in, garbage out, of course.
Yeah. So definitely need someone with knowledge leading the volunteers who are involved in inputting the data. So don't just turn the whole shebang over to volunteers. Keep some knowledgeable right. people there that are monitoring the efforts. One thing that worked out really well for us as we supported people using the database when we were in Sleepy Eye was actually documenting for them with screenshots. And when I say screenshots, I would have the software up on my screen and I would demonstrate some function and take a picture of it on my computer. That's what a screenshot is. And with that screenshot, I could then add it to a Word document or whatever, draw arrows to certain parts of the screen that I want to draw their attention to, make notes on it or number the steps that they need to do with different software and stuff. And if you've listened to Wells Tech for very long, you know that I have a favorite screen capture software. It's called Snagit. It's from a company called TechSmith. And there's lots of different options for doing screen capture, but this one has been around for a long time and they do it really, really well. So if you want, you can download a free trial of the software and make your own documentation during your free trial period. If that satisfies your need, then you don't even have to pay anything for the software. But they do have nonprofit pricing, so be sure to check that out if you're interested in the software. I don't want to give them too much time on the podcast without announcing that there are other tools out there, specifically really good at doing screen capture videos like Screencast-O-Matic and Loom, which Jason Schmidt recently recommended as his pick of the week. So check out any of these different softwares, and I think you'd be happy with the results, either for imagery or for video where you actually talk someone through a process.
Picture's worth a thousand words. And, you know, there is some maintenance to that. You have to keep up with it. So if software changes, you have to kind of do a review of your support videos as well, which can be a pain, but it's well worth it in the end. And, you know, I find it, that's really my preference of communication, is just to do a quick screencast, even if it's not professional, just do quick demonstrations. There are some rules of the road for that too. Keep it short. Don't go on for an hour. Nobody's really going to watch that, or it's very difficult to find what somebody might be looking for. Clearly document it or tag, you know, the videos, those kinds of things. So if you keep them short, then it becomes less of a chore to try and redo it if something has changed, if the menu has changed or the approach has changed or your process has changed. And it's not just you're not just doing feature sharing. You're doing, well, this is what we do when, you know, there's a new head of household or a new child is born, or, you know, those kinds of things. So it's really more process than it is. This is how you add a new record, which, you know, the software hopefully is good enough that you can kind of figure that out. But
so a lot of what we've kind of talked about, Martin, is around the area of tech support. And we do a lot of tech support in the day-to-day roles that we perform for the Synod. But you need to have someone who's comfortable with your church management software or school management software, who can be a tech supports person right there on site, who can develop the documentation or the screencast videos or whatever it may be the buddy that they can call on, that kind of thing. But in a bigger scheme of things, you also need to pick software that has good support from the software vendor, so that when you're stuck as the techie who's your congregation's tech support person, you have someone to turn to for support yourself.
Critical. Absolutely. Yeah, that's one of the, that should be very high in your list when you're making software selection. If that's going to tip the scale, if there's a thing that's going to tip the scales for me when I'm picking a software package, if it's apples to apples, I'm going to really, is it just you know, email support? Is it just an FAQ or a forum that they provide? Are there real people you can talk to? When can you talk to them? About what can you talk? A break fix kind of things? This seems to be broken. Or will they walk you through and take the time to build a report? And, you know, those kinds of things. Really important stuff. So speaking of support, one of our favorite vendors that provides just awesome support, that provides also the, you know, the software, the kinds of software that we're talking about, Shepherd Staff and Church 360, is Concordia. Concordia Publishing House, subsidiary Concordia Technology Solutions. And we've talked to folks from there before, and we thought it would be wise for this show to bring in an expert, Peter Frank, who is a marketing manager there. And we've talked to Peter a number of times in the past, but he was willing and good enough to come on the show another time. Last week we recorded this and talked a little bit about some resources that they have and a little bit more about Shepherd Staff and Church 360 and just some general tips and best practices that he has uncovered talking with hundreds of customers. You know, very different than maybe just you or I, Sally, just plugging away in our own little environments. He's talked to little churches, medium, big churches, all kinds of different scenarios, and he shares some of his wisdom with us. So let's take a listen to our conversation with Peter Frank from Concordia Technology Solutions. Happy to have joining us today, Peter Frank, Senior Marketing Manager of Church Supplies for Concordia Publishing House. Thanks for joining us again, Peter. You've been on the show a number of times.
Thanks for being here. Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
As usual, let's maybe share with our listening audience a little bit about yourself, what your position is, how long you've been there, what you do, that kind of stuff.
Sure, absolutely. So like you mentioned, I'm senior manager of church supplies, which is overseeing all the products that the church as an entity buys. So that includes church software, which I've been doing for about 5 years now, and then other things like offering envelopes, bulletin covers, music, and the like. So I've got a team of people working with me. It's not all on me, but it helps build these long-term relationships with the congregations that we work with and then try to meet their needs as, in as many ways as we can. So marketing is my focus, so I spend a lot of time using social media and all the digital tools that that our industry has changed towards. So yeah, I've been with the organization for a little over 10 years now. I started out on the retail side, so I've worn a number of different hats in my time here at CPH.
And CPH located down there in, is it not in St. Louis proper? Is it?
Actually, it is. Yeah, oh, okay. Just a few minutes away from Anheuser-Busch. We can see the brewery and the arch out our windows.
Yep, nice old building down there you have.
It's only about 140 years old.
Right, so. Exactly. We've known each other for quite some time, and our relationship has been built around Shepherd Staff and now Church 360. We have a wonderful relationship there that gets our churches and schools discounted access to those products, and we really appreciate that relationship. And you've been busy writing blog posts and talking about some of the things that we talk about on Wells Tech, volunteers in the church. And we're doing a whole series this month on training techies. And this week we're talking especially about those who manage the church database, the church management software side of things. And you've been playing in that space quite a bit and talk to a lot of people whose responsibility it is to manage that stuff.
Yep, absolutely. As we've worked with churches and as things have changed, as churches have shrunk and as technology has become more accessible, we find that it's a much better situation where the church can rely on volunteers to do some of these day-to-day tasks and allow the professional church workers to be focusing on what they do best. It always pains me to hear when a pastor has to enter offerings into their database. That's not the best use of his time. And so, yeah, we've really been focusing on that quite a bit. And it's not a new thing. It's just becoming more and more prevalent and important for congregations.
And I would guess with the advent of the internet and particularly your Church 360 product, people can do this from anywhere, basically. It's not the old model where they have to be sitting at the church secretary's computer to do the work on the database. So that kind of opened up a lot of avenues as well.
It really did, and we knew that was coming. And as we developed Church 360 several years ago, that was one of the key selling points, was that you could do that from anywhere. And you know, one of my favorite stories is a couple, I believe they're in northern Wisconsin, who their way of serving the church is to collect the offering envelopes. The money's already been taken out and put for the deposit, but they've got the amount on the envelopes. And so every Sunday after church, after lunch, they sit on their couch and they enter it into Church 360. And that's their way of serving their Lord and their church. And it's easy to do. It's secure because you can assign the different permissions so people aren't having access to everything, just what they need. And there's the uses of that just continue to grow. So much so that that's really where we've been taking Shepherd Staff as well over these last few years, with the introduction of web tools just for volunteers to be able to do these kind of tasks, offer an entry and attendance entry from the comfort of their home, because really church office is less accessible than ever before.
So you mentioned security and accessibility. What are maybe some other criteria that people should be thinking about when they're kind of making a decision on church management, a church management software solution?
Well, usability is a key part of that, because as you are using volunteers, you may not have as techie of volunteers as you have for somebody who's used to working in the church office. They have this time and the desire to help. They may not have the skill set right off the bat. So being able to train them, like you're talking about right now, is important. But you also, when they're doing it on their own, you don't have the secretary office manager there who can help them out. And so making sure that it's very intuitive, easy to learn and to adjust to on the fly is part of that. Accessibility also more from just location, but also device is going to be a key part of what you consider. Personal computers, while still very common, are not where people are looking to move towards. They're looking at tablets and even mobile phones for that kind of data entry. So those are the two key things that I think every church should be focusing on as they're looking at enlisting the help of volunteers with the software. Does it provide that?
And more along the lines of onboarding the volunteers, we talked before the interview about the fact that you can provide them with some documentation, some screenshots, maybe some video overviews, that kind of thing. So if the church secretary isn't sitting next to them holding their hand, they have something to fall back on. Do you work with congregations that have that kind of media in place, documentation and such?
Well, yeah, and we've had to adjust in a variety of ways over the last couple of years to meet those needs. So one of the first things we did was to really institute an onboarding program for new customers that was outside our traditional model because it wasn't always the church staff who was being trained. And so our onboarding goes through specific individualized training for whoever's going to be using it, not just purchasing the software. So volunteers can have that time and get that specialized training. One thing we didn't think we would need to do and kind of pivoted afterwards was still training manuals. We've had shepherd staff training manuals for years, and we continue to update and print those. But moving to Church 360, we thought, okay, well, this could all be online help centers. And the need was there for a printed training manual. So a couple of years ago, we printed training manuals for this web-based platform because learning hasn't, for many people, it's still easier to have something tangible to learn from and put in front of their desk. And videos, webinars, we are spending a lot of time on that. We've got a new approach that we're just testing out now with more short videos where it'll be a screen share and a video of a person talking so that you get that personal connection and much more bite-sized training videos for that, as opposed to our longer, you know, 60, 90-minute training webinar. So trying to meet the needs of time and, again, accessibility based on what these volunteers need most, because they often have full-time jobs. They're not in the church office, but they really want to be able to learn and help out at the church.
So let's talk a little bit about the data management side, some best practices around that. It's very easy, I think, for a database to get out of order or in disorder if you've got that many people working on it. Volunteers come in and out. What are some key tips or things, best practices, or what have you, that you could recommend that every church maybe should think about as they're setting this up, and rules of the road, so to speak, for those people that are using the system?
Sure. Well, it depends on the type of data that you're talking about and how maybe the first step is think, how are you going to acquire this data? Because if it's coming in from multiple sources, then having standards of entry is key. And so in Church 360 members, we've had tags since the very beginning. And it's a very easy to use way of adding information to people to say, okay, that's kind of like a post-it note. I'm going to put this on here. You can have a collection of tags that give a broader view of people. Well, what we found is that people were using them and using them a lot and in many and various ways, right, which was not as beneficial at the church side. So as we added custom fields that had very more structured data, so drop-down lists or at least a single location to find this text data, or even dates for that matter. That allows you as a church to determine, okay, this information is important to us. We want this for everybody, and it always goes in this one spot. And so it's flexible enough that it doesn't matter to us what that data is, but we give you the tools to do that. And that's been very helpful, and it's been fun talking coming to people in the church to see how they're using that and for different purposes. We just recently, about a year ago, adopted Church 360 at my congregation. And so it was fun to be on the customer side of things and set that up and train the staff. And I learned a lot just by sitting in the office for several hours at a time and training them. But that thought process of, okay, this is great to have this data. Where are we going to get it from? And so training them on the uses of that. So, you know, when pastor is on a visit meeting with, new members and talking to them about their interests and occupation, well, pastor, just enter this in here on your phone. And that way at that time, you've got that data stored in the right place and others can use it from there. So those are a few of the key best practices. First off, determining what data you want, where it's coming from, where it's being stored in a very structured manner.
I like what I'm hearing. I like your focus on the user as you're, developing new things and enhancing the system. What other enhancements have happened recently to Shepherd Staff or Church 360 that our listeners would be interested in?
Sure. Well, those are the more recent ones. A few things that we're working on moving forward with is integration with different apps. And integration has been a key for several years. But as there are more and more apps out there that do different things and very specialized things, we can't build custom integrations for everything. It's too time consuming to not only implement, but also to maintain because there's so many. And so we're pursuing app directories where you could link where our product could be featured in that directory and connect with others. And so that's going to be something you'll see in the coming months that I'm very excited about, so that it's going to leave it up to our customers' imaginations how they can use it, but provide some really powerful tools. And then, of course, mobile is a key part of that. And in both Shepherd Staff and Church 360, thinking of what is the, moving forward, how do you use church management software on your phone? Knowing that there's limited uses, it's not effective to enter offerings on your phone, but it's very effective to enter pastoral visits and notes, and maybe taking attendance. Maybe you're sitting in the back of the church looking at the list of names and typing it there as opposed to having people fill out cards. So that's been fun, looking at other areas where we can integrate with different products we provide. There's a number of things in the works. Those are a little bit more long-term. But thinking outside of what our customers are asking for, and thinking, well, what can we do for them that delights and excites them? So more to come on that, just a little bit of a sneak peek, but it's really changed how we think about development because there's so many more opportunities in the world of technology.
Just one last question before we let you go, Peter. One thing that I've really enjoyed hearing from those that use Shepherd Staff or Church 360 is their experience with your support staff. Tell us a little bit about the philosophy there. My impression is that it's not just when something's broken, somebody can give you a call, but walk me through this report, or I don't understand how this works. It seems like that's been a very positive thing for a lot of people using your product in particular.
Absolutely. Our goal is to help the customers not just solve their problems, but solve root problems, which in many cases is simply training. And so while we don't have a focus on getting people off the phone right away, it's not all about speed. It's about efficiency and understanding that we want to solve this question once and for all for you. So if it's, this report isn't working right now, let me show you the options that we have for reports, how to use them, so that you can become that expert at your church and understand how to do it. So getting to the root cause. What helps is that our support team are people who are engaged in their church. We're not farming this out to a foreign country where it's all about software, but it's about church people and understanding the needs of the ministries and be able to solve that, look for opportunities where we can go that step beyond. And I think that really sets us apart from other support centers, is that it's about caring for the mission and the ministry and not just that one phone call. We've been able to build some really long-term relationships with people in the church, and you'll hear it all the time. They'll call up and say, I really want to talk to Jordan, or I really want to talk to Rod, because they've had that experience before, and it's been a great experience. So looking at people as people, looking at ministries as the mission more than the tools that we support.
Yeah, excellent. And I think especially when you're dealing with nonprofits or organizations like a church, where you have a steady stream of volunteers, giving them the comfort level that they have a phone number they can call and get some assistance, that's a really important thing. Regardless of whether you use a CPH product or something else, that would be a big consideration when you're making that product selection, that support is a real key piece when you're trying to support or build a team around volunteers.
And making sure everybody knows too that it doesn't, just because you aren't on the church staff doesn't mean you can't call us and get the help.
Right.
You know, we know you're associated with the church. We're happy to help you.
Awesome. Thanks, Peter. You've been very gracious as always. We love talking with you, and thanks for coming on. We'll put links in the show notes to some of the stuff that's out there. We're going to feature your resource center, which is just an awesome collection of blog articles and videos and webinars, those kinds of things. I stumbled on it the other day and thought, boy, this is just really worth sharing. You guys do a nice job with that stuff.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Take care. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks to Peter for joining us again. Great insights that Peter provided.
Yeah, I always enjoy talking to him. You can tell that he and his team enjoy what they do and, you know, have that personal experience with their software that goes a long way. Peter also shared with us, and we'll make sure and include a link in the show notes, a webinar that they recently hosted titled Using Volunteers in the Office with Church 360 Members. I think maybe they did that for us, Martin, because that fits so well with our topic. And it's on one specific software, their Church 360 Members software. But I think many of the things shared would apply to other softwares as well.
Application. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
So good stuff.
All right. So let's move on to our news and tech segment.
Yeah, we have a couple of things to share here. One, not quite recent. I think it came out last week. I read a headline that said there was a problem with Grammarly, a very popular Google Chrome extension that will clean up your grammar in various places that you write. Particularly in documents on the web, obviously, but the browser extension had been exposing users' private documents. So they have put a fix in place, but just be aware if you're a Grammarly user that there had been a problem, a bug was found, and that they've worked through that and put a fix in place. So you can reference this article. We'll have a link in the show notes to learn more about the 22 million users who may have had their private documents exposed. So
yeah, Grammarly is a great tool, but not at that cost. So
definitely. And then one I just read about today, we are in the throes of the Winter Olympics happening over in South Korea. And apparently there has been some malware that's recently been disclosed that was specifically targeting communications around the Winter Olympics. So designed to disrupt television and journalistic communications and things. So sad world that we live in that this kind of stuff is out there, but they are working to, you know, circumvent the attack. It's a very specific bug that was released just with the Olympics in mind. So sad to read.
It's everywhere. Yep.
Yeah.
All right. So on some happier news, Wells Now is our next segment. And there is a conference, a couple of conferences coming up from the Men of His Word conference organizers. So Men of His Word is a men's ministry that's been going on for some time. And they have two conferences in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, and one coming up, that's in a couple weeks, less than 2 weeks, actually, and then Rochester, Minnesota, October 27th. I am actually speaking at the Oshkosh conference, looking forward to that. This would be my first time at the conference, and I'm looking forward to spending a little time there with the folks and talking about technology, the good and the bad of technology, and living and serving our Savior through it. So I'm looking forward to that.
Excellent. You'll have to give us a report on how it goes.
I will. Let's move on to our picks of the week, Sally.
And I'm going with a theme, apparently, for 2 weeks in a row, I'm talking Google search tricks. Because last week, you may remember that I talked about speed test, that you can simply type the word speed test into your Chrome browser, into a Google search search box, and it'll come up right away with a speed test that you can run on your computer to see how well you're connected to the internet, upload and download speeds, that kind of thing. Well, this week, I have two more words to share, two more search tricks to share with you related to Google's search window. The first one is called Set Timer. So if you just type Set Timer in your browser window, it'll come up and you can click in and decide how much time you want to set it for. Or you can type Set Timer and a specific amount of time, like 1 minute. And the timer, and you can put in seconds as well, but if we say 1 minute, the timer will start or come up on your screen and start counting down with 1 minute. Now you may notice that it's kind of a tab thing. It says timer on one and it says stopwatch on the other. So your alternative search term to use the stopwatch is start stopwatch. Wow, start stop. So if I go to another Google window and I type start stopwatch, then I'm going to get the stopwatch functionality with a button to press to start. And then you can start timing something using the stopwatch. You can go full screen with it if you want. And whenever you stop, you have the ability to reset it to zero or to keep going with your timing, whichever you prefer. So two easy functions in your Google search built right in there that allow you to set a timer and start it or start a stopwatch and keep up with time. So I'm ticking down to my time running out. And I'm getting a little audible signal in my ear that the timer has expired. So I get a little beep, beep, beep. You could use this in a classroom. You can use it during presentations. Whatever your need is to set a timer, you can use it just to keep yourself focused for 5 or 10 minutes on something and set a timer to alert you when the time is up. So two easy and quick things to do in the Google search bar.
You're on a roll with the Google search stuff. That's awesome.
Yeah. Who knows what's coming next week?
That's right. When you were talking about that, I said, well, it'd be great in classrooms, which you mentioned. I think there's a lot of opportunity. My wife, Debbie, uses her watch or her phone to do that, but this would be a little bit more visible too. So
right, up on your projection screen.
So. Yeah, exactly. All right. My pick of the week is... and get to the right spot here. I think I have to share my whole screen. Seeing that, Sally?
I'm seeing it.
All right. I have to give credit where credit is due. Professor James Karlofsky from Martin Luther College tweeted this earlier today as I was kind of considering what my pick might be. I was on my Twitter feed and came across this. He didn't write this, but he tweeted it, and excellent article entitled, How to Use Google Calendar as a Personal Journal from Today. It's really amazing, and I don't use Google Calendar that much. I mean, we use it here on the show, but my personal calendar or professional calendar is in Outlook. But lots of different features here that would make it a good candidate to be something that tracks almost anything. They talk about, and they get down to the basics, how to create a calendar, how to share calendars, insert entries, those kinds of things. And you can create more than one calendar. But I guess I didn't realize you could upload attachments, images, add a lot of text, formatted text, in fact. You could add coloring to both the event itself and the description. Again, you can share. You can they have a whole section here on journaling. So the opportunity to kind of go day by day, whatever kind of journal that you would want, whether that's a Bible journal, prayer journal, fitness journal, diet journal, whatever it is, they obviously don't go into the spiritual side of things, but I think the implications or the capabilities are pretty clear of all the things that you can do with a very flexible tool and something that is available on your smartphone or tablet or computer. It's all there, and also it can be hooked up to your smart devices at home. Your Google Home or Alexa, those kinds of things can all get attached to these things as well. So just an easy free tool to use, and I hadn't thought of this as an application for that, but it's really a perfect fit. And this is a great article. They've got screenshots and different ideas of how you can use this and share it, and just a super application, I think, for the tool. Sally, do you use it like that at all? I know you're more of a Google Calendar user than I am.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of using it that way, but I love the application. You know, the fact that you can look back and reflect on your calendar over time, maybe see different entries and things, reference things when things happened, that kind of thing makes it a really powerful tool. It's funny, Martin, because I was reading, I want to say it was an EdTech article. It was about a teacher using Google Slides in the classroom in place of a daily journal. So the same kind of concept, but they were doing it with Google Slides, where you can put in images and, you know, have text areas and do whatever. It's very free-form layout if you use Google Slides in that way. And so I just love how we have this amazing tool set at our disposal and how creative people are to come up with uses for the tools that we've been given. So excellent. Excellent extension of the Google Calendar. I love it.
Yeah, very flexible tools. You just have to, you know, there really isn't a limit just to your own creativity and how you use these things. And they made some really nice improvements to the tools. They're very intuitive, and I think they're good choices for a lot of different applications. We talked about Google Calendar and project management,
mm-hmm.
how to use that for planning and those kinds of things as well.
So. Yeah, imagine looking back at that. You know, maybe if you add just a little bit more to your project management use, it becomes a running track of all the things that have happened in a project.
And then the shareability and those kinds of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Actually, a good ministry resource, but we have another ministry mm-hmm. resource that we'd like to share.
We do. We're going to keep with the theme of Concordia Technology and all the excellent resources that Peter and those at CTS have made available. In particular, they have a really great blog. They call it their Resource Center, and you can head over to it at the link that we include in the show notes. And you'll often see these things tweeted out there or shared on Facebook or Instagram. Just they have a lot of good social media stuff going on to share their content. But, you know, very vast selection of articles and things that you can make use of. They've got Facebook information, Google Tools information, doing e-newsletters, things about church attendance in the church management software, and on and on. Most recently, I just saw this one released this morning, I think, Why Canva is a Church Communicator's Best Friend. So they kind of take a deep dive into the online tool Canva, which is basically kind of a desktop publishing tool where you can do layout and design, and they give you some really professional tools to work with. So if you're looking to read up on any church-related topics, the Concordia Technology Solutions Resource Center is a good place to look.
Awesome. Good. Yeah, I'm very impressed with the resource. Let's move on to a community feedback.
Yeah, a couple of things came across that we wanted to share. From the Google for Education newsletter, we picked up on the fact that Google for Education has a Facebook page. Go figure.
Wow.
I think this is pretty new. They've been relying on their Google Plus community very heavily. So this is a new launch for them to actually have a Facebook presence for Google for Education. But if you're a Facebooker, you can head on over there and like the page. And actually, I'm going to jump the gun and show you a little bit about how to get the information in your newsfeed. So this is another one of our community feedback topics. Came across an article, an example of to tell people how to get your page information into their newsfeed, because believe it or not, Google is changing and regularly changes those the logic that controls what shows up in your newsfeed. So if you like a page, you can follow the page and click on see it first, and then it will show in your newsfeed a lot more regularly. So the secret is to look at that following dropdown and click on see it first. And like I said, kind of jumping over to that topic, we actually had an article shared, let me see if I can find the right one, that we'll put a link to in the show notes, that actually talks through training people to use your Facebook page in that way, to change those settings and select see it first so that it comes up in the new paradigm of the Facebook newsfeed, because they've changed things quite a bit. And your church or school newsfeed might get kind of buried and not show to people as regularly as it has in the past. So you want to give them good instructions. This is an example of a screenshot from a phone where someone's showing them that you can click on that following and click that option to see it first. And that's what will make it show up in the newsfeed. So a good thing to train your Facebook friends of your church page in particular to make use of. And if you're following WellsTech on Facebook, maybe you want to do it for WellsTech.
Yeah, that's
as well.
That's cool. I like that. You know, yeah. Very straightforward. So.
And
all right.
One more quick mention, one more community feedback, and that is that Google's CS First, which is their computer science for kids initiative, has a special computer science set of lessons for Valentine's Day. So we are on the eve of Valentine's Day. Of course, for us, we celebrate the beginning of Lent on February 14th this year as well. But if you're looking for an activity for students for Valentine's Day, here's a little computer science coding using the Scratch interface to make a Valentine's Day Google Doodle. So check that out.
That is cool. Yeah. All right. I think we're to the point in the show where we feature a video of the week. And I think maybe we ought to give some love to our friends at Accordia Technology Solutions.
Imagine that. Again, circling back to CTS and the great content they put out there, they have a well-stocked YouTube channel as well. So you can head over to youtube.com/user/Concordia Technology and subscribe to their channel if you like. But you're going to find all kinds of great videos, including one that's called The Value of Tracking Church Attendance and How to Do It. So that might be an area where you want to train your volunteers, and this could be the perfect video to get them started. So check it out on the Concordia Technology Solutions YouTube channel.
Yeah, and it's not all about their products, although they're featured, of course, and that's the reason that they do it, but there's just some good valuable, good, you know, thought there that I think would meld well with any church's digital strategies.
Very true.
Sally, what are we going to do next week?
Well, we're going to keep talking about training volunteers, and we're going to shift our focus to training them to be social media ambassadors for your church and school. So social channels have a lot of a far-reaching impact, I could say, if your people are sharing your word with their friends, and potentially their friends are sharing with more. So you want to give them some guidelines and encourage them to follow your channels and to share your content. And that's what the focus will be next week.
Looking forward to it, as always. All right. Thank you, Sally. And thanks to everybody who joined us this week. You can be a part of the show by going to WellsTech.wells.net, and that's our show notes page where you can see all the links and all the stuff we talked about. Send us an email, WellsTech@wells.net, and we're on the social medias, Pinterest, Twitter, Facebook, Digo, Google. They're all places where we frequent, and we would love to get your feedback on things we talked about in the show, things we didn't talk about, things you'd like us to talk about. Please contribute and join the conversation. Thanks, everybody, for joining us, and blessings on your Lenten journey. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.